Welcome to Fairbanks Real Estate Radio Podcast. Sorry, it's been so long since I recorded an episode. I keep having technical difficulties with this one. I don't know why, either my batteries run out on the recorder or, you know, all kinds of stuff. I got busy with work. Anyway, enough of the excuses. I want to get right in. So this episode is it's the current real estate market in Fairbanks and North Pole. So what this is, every year I do a seminar with Gene Duvall and Jackie Rosenthal about the real estate market and statistics and stuff that we put together for the seminar. And Jackie and Gene talk at the seminar, and this year I recorded it, but the recording sounded really bad. Gene was too far away to be able to hear him. So I'm going to kind of go through these, and if you would like a copy of the statistics for this stuff, just let me know, and I'll be happy to get that for you. The first one here, interest rates are down a little bit, which is really surprising. All of the lenders have been telling us for years that they're going to go up any time now, but last year was 4.375 last year at this time, and right now it's about 3.75%, you know, average 30-year fixed mortgage interest rate. So statistics, we've got total houses sold for the year. In the year 2014, the total houses sold in the Fairbanks, you know, North Pole market, 1,085. So that's up a little bit from 2013, was 1,037. And sold statistics. So we've got a breakdown of how many houses were in each price bracket. You know, Fairbanks, as Gene has pointed out before, is a blue collar town. So, you know, we only had five in our MLS that were above $500,000. Then, you know, 450 to 500,000, there were 11. 400 to 450 was 17. 350,000 to 400,000, there were 40. 300,000 to 350, there were 79. 250,000 to 300, there were 180. 200,000 to 250,000, there were 250 of those, and under $200,000, there were 503. So, the nearly half of the houses sold in Fairbanks, Alaska, are under $200,000. So, we're talking about like a small three bedroom, one bath, maybe like 1,200 to 1,500 square foot kind of house is the average type of house. Active residential listings. So this is year to date. So at this time last year, there were 478 active listings. And as of the 18th of March, which was when we pulled this data, also thanks to Christine Tim for she did a lot of this research, 445. So down a little bit, but, you know, it was also a week later last year. So I don't know. It's probably about the same. Closed residential listings. So this is, again, year to date, 147 this time last year and only 129 this year. So maybe things are taking a little bit longer to close. It certainly feels that way. Percentage of the market by area. So this one's kind of interesting. 58% of our market is Fairbanks, 27% is North Pole, 15 is other. So when we say other, we're talking about outlying areas like Delta Junction, Nenana, Anderson, Healy, and Salcha. Last year there were 63% Fairbanks. So we've seen a little bit more in the outlying areas. a notice of defaults recorded. So this doesn't mean that a house is in the foreclosure process yet. It just means somebody sent out a letter to someone saying, hey, you're behind on your payments, and if you don't get caught up, we may have to start foreclosure. So 2013, this time of the year, there were for the year 2013, there were 253. For 2014, there were 232. So about the same, you know, a little bit less, a little fewer. Bank-owned properties. This statistic is really interesting. So in our MLS, this is a percentage number of the sold listings that were bank-owned, meaning, you know, REOs or foreclosures. So in Fairbanks, 12% of the listings sold were REOs or foreclosures. That's pretty high. But in North Pole, it was 23%. So that is really high. And, you know, we're definitely seeing that. I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of go together in North Pole to make this happen. So one thing, you know, fear of the market, fear of what's going to happen if either of the military bases shut down. We've got other factors, like there's the sulfalane contamination in the groundwater in some areas of North Pole has contributed. Another contributing factor is that being between two military bases, a lot of the buyers buy using a zero down VA loan, and then by the time it's time for them to move on, they haven't gotten enough equity in the house. So there are a lot of VA foreclosures, and just, you know, REO foreclosures in general. So, also another big one is that North Pole really overbuilt in like 2006, 2007, timeframe. They were building these, three bedroom, two bath, you know, 1500 square foot houses. And there were lots and lots of new houses at that time and not nearly enough buyers. So those builders kind of got stuck. They couldn't sell them. The banks had to take them back. So North Pole is overbuilt. And then the types of loans that people get and the turnover in that area all kind of are contributing factors. But hopefully we'll see that changing around. Year to date in Fairbanks is 17, so up from the 2014 statistic, where year-to-date is 17%. Year-to-date North Pole is 37%. So I don't know. Maybe I think more REOs are sold in the wintertime, and we're seeing the end result of that. So maybe that'll change. And then 33% in other, but that's only three listings. So that means like 3 out of 10. So, you know, it's not a great statistic for the outlying areas. Okay, if you're a seller, the best thing to do is the price. You know, the price is the most important thing. People say location, 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 but actually a good property priced properly is the best way to go. Avoid gimmicks and hidden costs and inexperience. There are all kinds of gimmicks. You know, people promise you things. But doing things like offering more commission to somebody who brings an offer, you know, by a certain date or whatever. It's not, you know, the realtors aren't the ones buying your house. It's a buyer, right? The house has got to be appealing. That's much more important than trying to coerce other realtors into showing the house. You know, buyers come to us looking for places to buy. So the value for a property is what a seller is willing to pay. So if you spend $10,000 on your upgrading your kitchen, you may not necessarily get $10,000 of equity back, but what you do get is marketability. So you get more people looking at it, more chance of buying it. If a house sits on the market for a really long time, it may not sell. It may sell for a lower price. So if you're a seller, another thing to do is have the house show ready before it goes on the market. So you want to have a realtor kind of go through and explain to you what needs to be done. Spend your money wisely. So that's part of also consulting with the realtor on what things will help. A big one that people will do sometimes is replace all the carpeting, and then you find out that the buyer has allergies and they don't want carpet, they want hardwood floor, or maybe they don't like the color. You know, so carpet is an example where it may not necessarily be the best thing to replace it unless there's something really, really wrong with it. Make sure the house is clean and uncluttered and smelling good. So that's a big one. You know, and sometimes Jackie had pointed this out in the presentation that sometimes the house that you're selling is not the house you would live in. So you're constantly keeping things picked up, make it look really nice and uncluttered. Don't make it, you know, you don't want it to be super comfortable or convenient. You want it to be really nice, and that's got to take precedence. On your way out the door, leave your lights on. So this was something that, this wasn't mine. This was something that Gene and Jackie put on there. You know, actually, to tell you the truth, when I'm showing a house, I get a little, and I see the lights are on when I come in, I get a little confused because I'm not sure if I should turn them off again when I leave. But, you know, it's a nice thing to do. It makes the house bright and more welcoming. Things that you will likely need. So plot plan, if you don't have a plot plan already, they're usually recorded with the, and the title company sends us a copy if, you know, as we're getting ready to list your property. So if there isn't one on file, we definitely need one because there's all kinds of things that you can run into. And when it, this is a tough one to explain to sellers because, you know, you give them examples, say like, you know, something could be in the power line easement, or the house could be too close to the property line. And then it's like, I tell a seller that and they'll argue with each specific example. And it's like, no, those are just examples. There are all kinds of things that we wouldn't have even thought of. But, you know, a plot plan is really important. We're lucky in Fairbanks because you don't have to get a new one with every transaction. In other places around the country, even around the state, they get a new one every single transaction, and our plot plans cost $1,000. So we're lucky because if you already have one, usually you can get away with continuing to use the same one as long as a lot of changes haven't been made. Flood elevation certificate. So if you're in a flood zone, and you should have a flood elevation certificate on file with your insurance company. But if you don't, like say you own the house outright and maybe you don't need to have flood insurance because there's no bank telling you to, get one ordered. So, you know, maybe if you're getting a plot plan anyway, get a flood elevation certificate from the same surveyor. It'll save a little bit of money that way. But you need the new, it's going to be required by the lender for the new buyer. And also they want to be able to get insurance quotes and figure out how much their flood insurance is going to cost. If it's, you know, thousands of dollars a year, maybe it's not worth it to them. Water tests. Gene likes to do sometimes water tests for not the standard one. The standard one is coliform and E. coli, and it's like that's a fixable problem. So he'll wait until the buyer makes an offer to do that one. But arsenic and nitrates are the ones that he tests for because that's kind of a big one. And if you have those you want to know about it. So the process of picking a real estate transaction first is you pick a realtor. The best way to do that is ask for referrals from friends, family, lenders, or associates. Then that, you know, if you're a buyer, that realtor helps you find properties. And if you're a seller, the realtor is helping you find buyers. Somebody makes an offer, the offer gets, you know, accepted. Eventually there might be counter offers or whatever. You have a 15-day discovery period. So once the offer is accepted, you have 15 days, a buyer has 15 days to get whatever kinds of inspections they want to get. Typically it's a home inspection. And during that time, you know, they get a report, you give a copy to the other realtor for representing the seller and negotiate repairs. Closing and possession. So, you know, once you close on the property, you take possession. Typically the next business day is the recording day. And that's at the title company, and typically buyer and seller don't close at the same time. They have separate appointments. So if you're a buyer, you want to get pre-approved first thing. And, you know, I hear this a lot. from buyers that, oh, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. I just want to see if I like the house first, and then I'll get pre-qualified. Okay, well, you know, first of all, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but you're kind of wasting your time and the realtor's time and the seller's time because the sellers are getting the house ready for showing sometimes. So get pre-approved, you know, then you know whether you can even afford to buy a house, or maybe there's some credit issue you didn't even realize was there. You know, may not even be your fault. You know, might be a mistake on there or whatever, but get pre-qualified, figure out if you can buy a house. You know, it's always such a relief for us to hear that they've already talked to a bank, for security purposes, sellers, peace of mind knowing that a pre-qualified person is going in there, not some random person that might be just looking, pretending they're interested in buying a house, but really they're looking at it so they can case the house and rob it later. You never know. So know your credit scores. You know, the bank will help you with your looking at your credit. See several houses at once and eliminate choices as you compare them. So I remember a long time ago, my first house was a fourplex, and I've talked about that before, but I was looking with Gene Duval, and he said, think about the house you're looking at now and the last house you looked at. Okay, and now compare those two and then, you know, throw one out. So you always have got your one, number one, best one. And in the presentation, Jackie had mentioned, if you're thinking, well, I like the bathroom on that one and I like the kitchen on that other one, you get yourself all mixed up and you're building a house in your mind that doesn't exist. So the best thing to do is rank each house as you go, and, you know, eliminate the ones that you don't want. You know, if they have too many negative things, then just, you know, why keep them on your list? Why keep thinking about them? Buy a house that you can sell again. So that's important. You know, some houses are hard to compare. There are strange things that make a house non-conforming, right? So, like a dome house, you know, would be one. If a house is on like 50 acres, you know, it's like, yeah, that sounds great, but, they're hard to sell because how many other comparable houses with 50 acres were there? You know, that kind of stuff. So think about that. If those things are really important to you, that's much different. But in general, you know, stick with the things that are important to you, but you want a house that's resellable. Figure out how much it's going to cost to hold and maintain the house. So, you know, what are your total costs? Types of loans. There's VA, which is 0% down. FHA is 3.5% down payment. Conventional is 5%. Investment loans where you don't live in the house, or maybe it's in a commercial property or something like that, are 20% plus. They look at those on a case-by-case basis, looking at the borrower and the property and decide what your down payment's going to be. And it's the same thing with cabin and land loans, too. Those are 20% plus. So, you know, as a buyer, think about things to think about for types of loans. You might qualify for grants. And if you've got a loan that's got less than 20% down payment, and that's almost everybody, you're going to have to pay mortgage insurance. So, and that's gotten more expensive, you know, with the mortgage crisis that we had in 2007. Mortgage insurance, a lot of those companies went out of business, and the few that are left raised their rates quite a bit. If you're doing an investor loan, of course, the minimum down payment is 20%. Minimum credit scores. So there are some loan programs that have a 580 credit score, but mostly you want to be higher than that. You want to be in the 600 or 700s. And that's it. So again, this whole presentation was put together by Gene Duval, Christine Tim, Jackie Rosenthal, and me. I'm Ryan Danhauser. Thanks. Thanks again for listening. I promise I'm going to try to keep these a little more regular. You know, but I do these at work, and I get wrapped up in other stuff at work. Then they end up getting pushed, you know, put off, I guess. Anyway, thank you for listening. This was episode 4 of Fairbanks Real Estate Radio. Fairbanks Real Estate Radio podcast can be found on iTunes, and on my website, www.fairbanksrealestateradio.com, which is also connected to RyanDanhauser.com.
So feel free to email me, ryandanhauser@mac.com, or you can give me a call, 907-978-2607.